The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union, and they have a growing community of over 1.8 million veterans like you. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/veterans.
Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Got to take a second to thank you guys real quick for tuning in every single week, supporting the show, following us on YouTube, following us on Instagram, all the things that you guys do to support us. We really appreciate it. And that's a great transition for me to talk about our Patreons. Our Patreons are the people that have gone the extra mile to support the show every single month. They got access to some exclusive content and they get to ask their questions. So I'm going to kick it off with today's Patreon question of the day, which is if you could try out a job for a day, just to see if you like it, job would you choose?
That's a thinking question there. That's a thinking question. There's some good ones out there we don't even know about.
And the room is silent.
I know.
I'd probably like to play quarterback for a football team or baseball or something cool like that.
Try that out.
I know I'm missing something.
I was thinking of, you know, a cheating method here, like sign up for some work placement place so you can try out a bunch of different jobs, or at least see how a bunch of different jobs are done, getting more out of it.
You got anything for Mike?
Say that.
You got anything for this?
What job? That's a tough one, man. I don't know.
Hunter, do you got one?
That is it.
Is it too basic to go Navy SEAL?
For one day, it's the best job in the world.
I think no matter what you're doing. Yeah, that's what
I would do. That is the best job in the world. Absolutely.
I think I would go president.
Ooh.
Pope.
A lot of information.
Yeah, I don't know if I want that responsibility.
For a day?
One day, I'll get in trouble.
If I could just do it for a day, I would want to be president.
What can I do in a day? That's not this. What can't I do? Yeah,
right. What kind of trouble can I get into in a day?
Right on. Yeah, that's all I got, man.
There's just so many careers out there that I'll see online, and I'm like, I didn't even know that job existed. I think it'd be fun to be Mike Rowe for a day.
Yes.
Because Mike Rowe.
Dirty jobs,
he just gets into it, you know? All the different things. Mike Rowe.
There's another Mike.
What the heck?
We've had a lot of mics in the last couple weeks.
So we can't wait to hear what you have to say, brother. They've all been badasses.
We have some mics coming up. We have lots of mics.
Yeah, the mic theme is strong right now at Team Never Quit. Mm-hmm. So if you are Mike and you're a good candidate for the show, let us know.
We got a spot for you.
High bar. That's right.
Starting the Team Always Mike podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Man. All right. Well, that's a great Patreon question. It's a thinker for sure. Make sure to continue that conversation over on our Patreon, patreon.com/teamneverquit. Let us know what you guys think. What job would you like to try for a day if you had the chance?
I said an athlete.
Oh, an athlete. Yeah. Okay.
A flight attendant would also be, I think, a fun job for a day.
Oh, gosh.
Professional golfer, maybe? I like to be that every day, actually.
All that travel?
That's not bad. That's a good one.
I'm about it. There's so many things. All right, yeah, Patreon.com.
You just went overseas with that. You know, that just opens up a whole new world.
That's right.
It's a whole new world.
All right.
All right, got a great guest in store for you guys. Mike McCassell is a Navy veteran, performance coach, elite athlete, air traffic controller, and for the last 15 years, Mike McCassell, I can just blend all that together. McCassell has been on a mission to show others what they are fully capable of being, from coaching world-renowned athletes and explorers to putting his philosophy and training methods to personal practice in service of a greater purpose. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
I just want to, when we start, to back this up. I see what you're capable of. That's the best part about it. And it's also the hardest thing to explain to people. Like, looking at you now, where you're at and where you come from are two different places. So I always like to back it up a little bit and tell us about that, man. How did this all start?
Yeah, where'd you come from? Give us a little background on your growing up.
Well, so I grew up, I grew up in a small town just south of Chicago called Kankakee, Illinois, if any of you are familiar with the area. Really small. I basically grew up in a cornfield out there. My mother was a first-generation immigrant from the Philippines. And my father was born and raised in Louisiana. And I grew up there in Kankakee,
where
Illinois.
Where in Louisiana?
Baton Rouge.
Yeah. I'm married into a Cajun family, bro. So y'all, we're probably related. All the freaking Cajuns are related. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, we are.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. I
so
got
you're
a
Filipino Cajun splice.
Never heard it worded like that, but I'll go with it.
That's an awesome combination. I mean, the ones we got running around here are an amazing bunch.
Yeah, Hunter just graduated from LSU.
Yeah, our oldest one. I married into a whole tiger den. I mean, they all go there, bro. It's amazing.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I grew up in Kankakee, Illinois, and, you know, my parents, I have an older sister, so it was just her and I, and my parents split when I was about 9. And my dad stayed in Illinois, and my mother actually went into the arms. She went into the Air Force, and from there she kind of packed up me and my sister, took us to New Mexico to go through officer candidate school. She was a nurse, and I grew up the second half of my younger years in New Mexico until I went to high school. I went to high school in Las Vegas, Nevada, and from there I went into the Navy. So I kind of bounced. I kind of moved around quite a bit growing up.
So you're a brat.
Mm-hmm.
Military brat.
Yeah, so yeah. She stayed with. And y'all were, you were in Mexico till you went to high school, and then she got stationed in Vegas.
New Mexico. No, she didn't get stationed in Vegas. She stayed in New Mexico, and she went on to do 20 years in the Air Force. Did a couple tours overseas as a surgeon, a combat surgeon over
there.
That's great. So
man.
she went on and she went on to retire as a colonel in the Air Force.
Wow.
And I moved to Vegas to high school with my father moved there. So my dad ended up moving to Nevada, and you know, I wanted to, you know, I was really into sports. I wanted my wings. My mother was a little bit too, you know, she was all about like school. She was a stricter of the two, and I wanted to really get into sports and, you know, spend time with my dad. So a little bit of backstory on that. When I was nine, we found out my dad had Parkinson's disease. So if you know the nature of Parkinson's disease, it's a neurodegenerative disease that affects the brain, affects your motor functions, it affects your ability to move. So it slowly takes away the things that you're basically everything that he loved to do. He was a very hands-on type of guy. Everything he loved to do was slowly just kind of taken from him day by day in real time. And we saw it. So, you know, my dad taught me how to fight. He taught me how to, you know, play sports. He taught me how to do all these things, and just kind of watching in a very fast, progressive amount of time, just kind of watch the roles reverse, was kind of, it kind of led me to want to be there with him, because I didn't know how much time really I would have with him to be, you know, to do the physical things like a man and his son, father and his son should do. And so I went and moved in and lived with him, end up being more or less his caretaker for my years in high school. So I moved there for sports and ended up not doing any sports because I just ended up being more of a full-time caretaker for my father at that point.
Wow.
Yeah, right. You're a good man.
Yeah.
That's tough, man.
At that point, when you graduated, you signed up for the Navy?
I did. Yeah, I had a choice to make to, 9/11 had just happened a couple years prior. I was, you know, growing up in a military and found my father served, by the way. So, you know, I just grew up in that culture of service, right?
Was he Navy?
I'm sorry?
What did your dad do? What branch?
He was Air Force. He was a military policeman.
Oh, okay. Well, all right, check.
Yeah, in the Air Force. So.
And you joined the Navy? Because I tell everyone to join the Air Force.
Yeah.
I mean, once I got in the Navy and did my first deployment, man, when you see how well the Air Force treats their people, it's something.
Yeah, it's something else. You know, it's those Yelp reviews go a long way.
I remember Chris, like, never again volunteer yourself. That's what Navy means. But, man, that's cool. Anybody else in your family, grandparents, anybody serving the military?
No, really. My uncle. So my dad's brother served, and he actually went missing. And he was in the Air Force. He went overseas and went missing. We still don't know where he is today. His kids don't know where he is. This happened a really long time ago. So my uncle, who I've never met, was in the Air Force, and he went on an assignment overseas out of Fort Bragg. got sent somewhere and went missing. So he's actually, you know, my uncle and my father were the two on my dad's side who were military, and my mother. So.
Well, man, bless your family.
Yeah.
Seriously. Okay, so.
Yeah.
Out of high school, then joined the Navy?
Went into the Navy.
How many years did you do there?
I did 11 years.
Man,
11
years in the Navy. Whoa, that 10 you're in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they say. I hear that a lot, and I heard that a lot. And, you know, but one thing I learned is, you know, something worse than doing a job that you feel that you've reached a plateau in, or that you feel that the growth if you're doing a job that you feel the growth has ended, or that the growth has stopped. The only thing worse than doing a job for 10 years or 11 years is doing it for 11 years in one day. You know, you've got to have that flexibility and adaptability to move on and you know, continue that growth. And I saw that, opportunity for me. I'm at the 11-year mark in my career.
What were you doing, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, sure. So at the time, so at 11, what was I doing? So in about 8 or 9 years in, I actually went to BUDS. You know, I wanted to be a Navy SEAL. So I was in class 297. I ended up blowing both of my knees out at the same time, and it was one of the hardest moments in my life. It was a big turning point in my career. Because I had committed, you know, I was a fleet. I was coming in from the fleet, and if you know anything about getting into BUDS from the fleet, it's a lot more competitive than going off the street. And I had trained. I was working at the what was called the Navy SEAL and SWCC Scout Team about a year and a half prior to going to training, and you know, I just went to BUDS, blew my knees out, and ended up in Washington State, and at that point, I was just kind of like, well, what am I doing? Like, I'm back doing air traffic control. My dream is, you know, I need to figure something out. I need to refine my purpose. I need to find something to pull me out of this dark hole I'm in while I'm recovering from these injuries. Because sitting there, you know, in Washington State and having that my one man pity party wasn't working for me anymore.
I'm curious as to what you do and your accomplishments now, what started that? How do you, I get the mentality. I mean, you wanted to be a SEAL, guys get hurt in the program, and then you charge back even harder after that. How'd you push into the extreme program?
Yeah. What made you see that window of opportunity to get out and do something else?
You know, that's a question that I asked myself a lot. I ask that question a lot because I feel that to answer that question that deep really goes back to my younger years. I think it goes back to when I was living with my dad, and when I had to make the decision to quit sports essentially. So I was in basketball, I was in track, I was an average athlete. I wasn't a super athlete. I was incredibly gifted, but I was enough to get a couple offers for scholarships and things like that. But there came a point where, you know, I would go to practice. I went to practice one time and I came home and my father had had a stroke. So I came home, he was on the floor. The Parkinson's started to progress and he would miss his medication, started to affect his brain. And one day I came home, he was on the floor, he had a stroke. So the day after that, I quit the team. I made a decision like, okay, you know what? I can't do both. I could take care of my dad or I could pursue this, you know, my love and passion for sports. But at the same time, you know, I want to be there for my dad. But in my mind, I think I internalized that as I quit. I quit on a sport, on something I loved, something I was passionate about. And so I kind of carried that with me. And there's something about, you know, looking at yourself in the mirror. There's something about knowing that deep inside that you quit something. And, you know, you could put on a lot of different masks. You could put on a lot of different, you can fool yourself. Or you can fool other people, but you can never fool yourself. And the second part of that is when I left for the military, you know, I left during a time where my father was, you know, he was already in stage 4 Parkinson's. So his motor function was almost completely diminished. His steps were small. He was always falling. The shaking, the tremors, Parkinson's is characterized by the tremoring of the hands. And I remember going to the bank with them and just seeing that he couldn't even sign his own checks anymore. You know, and seeing the frustrated man just trying to sign his checks to pay, you know, pay rent or pay the bills. He couldn't even do that anymore without help or assistance. And then here I am wanting to leave him and go and you know, pursue my own path in life, go into the military and serve what I felt was a cause greater than myself, really pulled hard part of me, because I did feel like a part of me was, you know, he encouraged me to go. He encouraged me to find purpose in life. He encouraged me to leave. But at the same time, I didn't really see that for myself. I felt like I was leaving him. I carried that guilt with me throughout my young adult life. And so then, you know, here I am, I'm not a quitter. You know, I know that I've pushed myself physically before. I've been through tough things before. Let me go through, you know, I'm doing a job that's very demanding on my mind. You know, air traffic control is one of the most stressful jobs on the planet. It's very mentally engaging, mentally challenging. And I wanted to see how far I was willing. I wanted to know how far I was willing to push myself. I wanted to see how far I was willing to stretch my limits for something I believe in and something I love. How far would I be willing to go for that? And it itched at me. And it got to a point where, you know, I couldn't sleep at night.
Talk about what that's like, that itch.
Yeah.
I've heard a million different ways to explain that, but normally when the trick, the itch, what that means.
Sure. It's like being in a hallway. Think of a long hallway. At the end of the hallway, there's a golden door. And you know that on the other side of that golden door, at the end of this long hallway, is everything you're capable of being when confronted with a challenge, when confronted with everything that you were put on this planet to do. Your fullest potential is on the other side of that golden door. Now you're walking down this hallway, and there's a lot of doors to the left and right. All right, there's a lot of doors that are, you know, you look to the right, there's a door, it's comfort, it's a shortcut. Right, you look to the left, there's another door, it's another easy way. There's all these distractions. Everything is pulling you from this hallway. Everything is trying to take you off this path. But if you take one of those doors, it always leads you back to the beginning of that hallway.
And how do you know that? That's a great way to say that.
Right.
And those doors are open and they're lavish and they're even labeled.
Yes.
They're freaking labeled, man. And
they're lit up like Vegas.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's a real thing. Yeah. Now talk about that.
Yeah, you know, you take one of those doors, you go in, there's a nice nice warm bed waiting for you in the room. You lay down on the bed, you're there, it's comfortable. Then before you know it, hours go by, days go by, weeks go by, and it's time to go. You get up and you're back in the beginning of that hallway, and you remember why you were in that hallway to begin with, and it hits you like a ton of bricks. It hits you like a ton of bricks.
Sure. Yeah, I heard it explained the same way. Matter of fact, they also said everything that's in all those doors is behind the one golden one. Mm. But when you peel them off, each individual, they're in there. You can go in there. Some of them are good, but you get worn out with it. Eventually, you get pushed back into the hallway because your ultimate destination is at the end. But they are. Exactly. They're labeled up for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, fear, hesitation, self-doubt, all the things that we use as excuses to stay in that hallway at the beginning of that hallway. I mean, that's what the doors are labeled as, you know, relationships, things that you think, you know, distractions, things that just pull you away from your purpose. I mean, those are what's behind those other doors. But I needed to know what was on the other side of that golden door. Everything, all the lessons my father instilled in me was pushing me towards that golden door. You know, when I was a kid, when I was growing up in Kankakee, I wasn't really very active as far as like sports with other kids, but my father would take me out fishing. He taught me how to fish. He would take me on the banks of the Kankakee River. And while I was out with him, he would tell me these stories. He would tell me a lot of stories that would go over my head. It was a lot of legends and myths of, you know, he would talk to me a lot about Stoic philosophy, Greek mythology. He'd tell me stories.
That's a father.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's right. Not a dad. That's a father.
He's real.
And they're completely different.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. Yeah. That's right. Because you don't get that till later in life. Normally after they're gone.
Yep. 100%. And it's true. I didn't get it until after, you know, till later, to where he couldn't really vocalize those stories to me anymore. You know, stories of like Hercules, you know, a man who was cursed in his life, you know, but he still had a choice to make. And that, I mean, it's really a story of every human being on the planet. You know, you're tested, you're dragged through the fire, you feel like you're cursed, but you still have a choice at the end of the day. There's still a choice. So you can either turn those things and use it as excuses or reasons, or you can, you know, downward spiral into madness. And, you know, my dad would tell me things like, you know, son, you suffer more than in imagination than in reality. I'm like, Dad, I'm six. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
I don't makes sense, man. Like, I know exactly what that means now. Back then,
let's go McDonald's. Yeah. I want some McNuggets.
Yeah, right. Toss those in there. Hammer them home.
Yeah. So, going through that, you know, then going through the program, getting hurt, you know, kind of like, I identified myself as someone who is very, you know, I identified myself by my physicality. And the problem with identifying yourself by one thing is you put all your eggs into that one basket.
Oh, sure.
That basket gets taken from you, man. You're left with nothing. You feel like nothing. And that's exactly what I did. I put all my eggs in that basket. It got taken from me like in an instant. And, you know, I was left in a place where like, well, who the hell am I? And what do I do? And I wish I could talk to my dad right now. You know, I could really use his advice right now.
What was he like? Was he a physical guy?
He was a physically strong man, but he was a man of very few words. He was more of like, just watch me do it. Like, just shut up and just watch me do it.
Yeah, as a father, all right.
And come up to your own conclusions about it, right? He was less, you know, talk and lecture and advice, but more of just like, you just watch how I handle the situation, so... Yeah, so you talk about what that itch is like, and that's exactly what it felt like. You know, it felt like I needed to find my purpose again in life and pull myself from that dark place. And that's how it all started. That's how I started this initiative called 12 Labors Project, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit more today. But that's how it all began. Is a way for me to kind of inspire other people, because I know there's other people who feel like me. I know that I wasn't going through it alone. I know there's other people who feel a loss of purpose and a loss of, you know, they're in that dark place for whatever reason in their life. And so I wanted to do something that was a physical manifestation of those feelings, physical manifestation of that struggle.
Oh, that's a great way of saying that. Mm-hmm. I've never heard it said like that. Can I steal that? That's pretty good.
It's all yours, Marcus.
You mind? Oh, I appreciate that, Mike. That's actually a pretty good one. That's really good. It says a lot too. When someone says it that way and what you have to go through, that's what's welled up in there. Mm-hmm. And if you can turn that around and use it to make it a strength, that's incredible. So please.
Yep. So I started, you know, I was like, well, what could I do? What could I do to, again, test those limits, to do something, to create something that was a physical manifestation of that message that I wanted to deliver. And I started this initiative called 12 Labors Project, where I set out to do 12 increasingly difficult physical feats for causes that are deeply rooted in my life. So things that are deeply connected to things that I've experienced through my time in the service, through my upbringing, through my adult life. You know, I struggled a lot with mental health issues, just going through the ups and downs of life. I had friends who lost that battle to those issues during my time in the service. And I wanted to, you know, bring attention to that and bring that awareness, not only of like the resources and programs that are out there to help people going through those things, but also kind of mitigate the stigma of just talking about it. You know, there's always that stigma, even especially being in the military, that to even talk about it, to even mention it, you're somehow weak or less or inferior or somehow broken somehow. But what I've learned over the years is, you know, the true strength, your truest strength, lies in that your white underbelly. It lies in facing that shadow and talking about it and being open about it. And you know, it took me a long time to get there. And I found that through these challenges, through stripping myself of those layers of my ego, of, you know, everything that I define myself as, the negative self-talk and my concern over the perception other people have on me. Through that process, I learned that, you know, it's not a weakness to be vulnerable. It's not a weakness to talk about that stuff. It actually takes a lot of strength to do it. Not a lot of people are willing to do it. When I started 12 Labors Project, the first challenge or the first labor that I had in mind was, okay, well, my biggest, my path to finding my purpose again is finding something that links to who I thought I was prior. And it's something that, something about my physicality, like, what can I do to challenge myself? I could do something I was good at. Like I could go lift weights. I wanted to do something that took me out of my comfort zone because that's where you grow. So at the time I was recovering. Now I'm going to preface all this by I don't recommend anyone do any of these.
let me give a disclaimer.
Disclaimer is like, this is how I choose to express my individual purpose in my life. And all of these labors that I do are, I mitigate as much risk as I can. I do the research. I know my body. I know, you know, the range of what I'm capable of doing, and I do everything I can to mitigate the risk. And with that said, there is still a lot of risk still involved with it, but you know, you find your purpose in life. It requires risk. It requires a degree of risk, but you have to be willing to take that step. You have to be willing to step on the precipice and look over the edge and see what's out there. And then you can choose, you can make an educated decision whether you want to jump or not. So I do those things in great detail, and I develop a very intimate connection to these challenges that I do. And I very much obsess over these challenges to the point where I look at every single detail. It's not something that I just go into recklessly. And because I don't give a shit about the records. I don't care about what comes after it. What I care is like, is this going to deliver my message? Are people going to remember why I did it? Not just what I did, but why I did it by doing it. So I have to make sure that is very clear. The first labor I did, I ran 50K with a 40-pound vest. I did it for cancer research. You know, my father suffered for a lot of different types of cancers. And I was still recovering from my knee surgeries at the time, right? But I wasn't willing to accept that what the doctors told me. I wasn't willing to accept that the doctors say, hey, you're never going to run the same again. You're never going to be able to run these distances again. You're never going to be able to, you know, this. You're never going to be able to do that. And it didn't sit well with me. It didn't... You know, it's kind of like going to school. You're going to school or college, and you know you're studying business, and your professors, you're listening to your professor, but they never had a business of their own.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
teaching and telling you all the ins yeah. and outs of business, but they themselves have never. So I felt that's what I felt like. I was like, how do you know? How could you tell me what my limits are? It's like telling me. It's like someone saying, you know, it takes a trillion gallons of water to fill the ocean. Well, how do you know? How do you know it's not a trillion and one? How do you know I can't fit one more bucket of water in the ocean? And a lot of people put that finite limit, that finite cap. And my whole question, my whole purpose is like, well, can you do one more? Can I put one more bucket in the ocean? Well, how do you know if I can or can't? And a lot of times people shoot themselves in the foot by listening to the perception and limits that other people put on them. And I wasn't willing to do that. So
oh, yeah.
I did
that's
the
where you get everything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Most every... If not a personal week, because there's a difference between your burden you get strapped with in life and then stuff, sure. and then what you encounter. Most of that sure. stuff, just like we were talking about with that golden door. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, when you're walking down a hallway, there's people coming in and out of those doors. I mean, not alone. And if you look over and go, hey, man, instead of just minding your own business and going in there yourself, be like, hey, what was back there? And whatever they tell you is what you're going in there with, armed with. Good, bad, or indifferent.
100%.
And if it wasn't for you, and then you're freaking out about something that you shouldn't, then that's a weight, actually. And yeah, you'll get stronger from it, man, but you didn't have to lift it. I didn't say you didn't have to or you don't, right? But, I mean, life's kind of like that, right? And that's why we have all the people around us. You get people around you that are lifting the same weight, same time, kind of great workout partners. I mean, their minds right. kind of ebb and flow together. That's something. It's a gift.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I knocked out the first labor, and you know, I got cracked. I wrecked myself, obviously. Right. I didn't train much for it. But hey, you know, I had a baseline. I said, you know what? Okay. I survived. I'm not dead. I'm hurt. I'm sore. I can recover from this.
See, I think guys like you, that's how all of y'all say the same thing. Goggins is the same way. Man, I just ate some crackers and went out there and freaking did my deal and got my ass kicked. And then he said exactly like you did. But it set my baseline. Mm-hmm. So I knew where to start from. So it's probably, it feels like a bad moment. It's a defining one.
Mm-hmm. 100%. You know, it's, life isn't, It's all about perspective, and it sounds cliche, but it's cliche for a reason. Things are cliches because it's been tested over time and
That's
time
right.
again.
That's right.
And they found it's been found to be true so much to the point that it's become cliche. cliche. And I, and that's one of those things. It's like, it's about perspective. Think reality isn't what happens to us. It's our interpretation of what happens to us. Reality is our response to what happens to us. It's the implication of what happens to us. You know, we're all writing our own story. We're all believing our own narratives that we tell ourselves, right? We're all our own individual echo chambers in our minds telling ourselves. And that then becomes what we put out there as reality. And so I wanted to see, you know, how far I could go. And so my second labor, I was like, okay, busted knees, I could still run. Great. I was never strong at pull-ups. All right. Never strong at pull-ups. I could maybe do 10, maybe 15 pull-ups consecutive on a good day. And that was my weak point. Pull-ups has always been my weak point. And so I set the intention for my second labor to beat the world record for the most pull-ups in 24 hours. This is 2014. At the time, the record was held by David
Goggins. Yeah, David Goggins.
He held the record at the time. And at the time, you know, when I was, I remember back at, when I was at the scout team, I remember him being there. He was recovering from one of his surgeries. And we would go on runs. We were with a guy, he would take us on runs up to Silver Strand.
Yeah.
And all the respect in the world for David. But at the time he wasn't really doing crazy things. But it wasn't really, he wasn't as out there as he is now.
Yeah.
So at the time it didn't really click. Like, I didn't really understand like if it was really, it took me a minute for it to really check in that this was the same person that, you know, we was at the scout team with. I was like, well, who else would it be? I mean, there's not that many black Navy SEALs and
there's
yeah,
not.
He worked at the Chicago at the, what's it called? The boot camp thing. Yeah, he was a
boot camp.
Yeah. He was like the scout.
Scout motivator.
Yeah. He was a scout motivator.
Right. Yeah. He was a scout motivator.
I remember when he went there. Forgot about that.
Marcus and David are friends.
Yeah,
I am too, but like they actually served together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. The pull-up thing is that you go, cause you're right. That's hard for everybody. That's pulling your weight in the upper direction. 15 is a lot. I mean, that's a lot for anybody, that number.
Right.
Truly is. So when you're going for the world record to set that, how do you even start? I mean, do you just walk up to the bar and be like, I'm going to do one and then drop back down and go back up? I'm curious because I always try to get better at my pull-ups. Mm. Yeah, and if you're
right,
doing
so
that, yeah,
the
I'm pull-up,
you know, you talk about doing, if you want to do more pull-ups, you got to do volume. You got to increase the volume of pull-ups you do. Now, there's volume and then there's intensity. So it's not going out and just crushing yourself, going all out and killing yourself in one set. A lot of people think they need to do that. They think they need to go out, max out, you know, do one set, max out. But the problem with doing one set, max out, is you crush yourself in one set. The next set you do, you can't do as many as you did in the first set. If I do less reps in more sets, I get more volume in a day than just crushing myself in the first two sets. So that's what I had to do. Again, I had to check my ego at the door and make a plan to not every set is going to take me to failure, but I'm going to do more sets in the day. And that's how you increase the volume over days and weeks. And then that will then, you know, compound into hours, being able to do more pull-ups in hours and minutes. And so that's what I did. So I would do like, you know, a workout I would train strength. So to be better at pull-ups, I mean, deadlifts, it's your whole posterior chain. So I made my deadlift really strong. I increased my cardiovascular capability because getting fresh blood and oxygen to those working muscles, because you're using the same group of muscles repetitively over and over and over. So having good cardio is going to help with that. Having a strong posterior chain is going to help with that because the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. So people think that pull-ups is just forearms, arms, or hands, grip, forearms, lats, back. But it's actually your whole body, because if you have weak legs, if you have a weak core, like that chain is weak in those areas. Your other area parts of your body are going to have to compensate because, again, there's only two points of contact and it trickles down in that chain. So, you know, doing those things. So doing the strength, doing the cardio and doing the max, the high volume of pull-ups in a week over the span of a week is what enabled me to do more and more pull-ups. But the first attempt, going back to the labors, first attempt I failed. It wasn't enough. The record at the time was 4,030. And I remember that day at 2,200, around 2,200 pull-ups, my hands started to rip. They started to rip because the mobile bar that I had out there was moving, right? So again, 2 points of contact and there's constant friction because it wasn't stable. I didn't have enough sandbags to hold the bar in place. My hands started to rip, forearms started to rip, biceps started to rip. I'm sure you heard a story when David talks about it. I started to have a lot of the same injuries that he sustained at around 2,200 pull-ups. So I remembered though, it was a public event. And it was in Oak Harbor, Washington, and there was a sign-up sheet where people can come and put money in the donation box, and they could sign they can commit to donating certain amounts of money that was based on the number of reps I was doing. There's a big screen next to my pull-up station. You could see the number of reps I was doing. There's a pull-up counter, and then there was the donation box where people could like, okay, I'm going to commit to this amount of money if you could get to this mark.
Right.
And so people would come out throughout the day. It was pretty cool because Patriot Guard guys came out there. It was a good.
Oh, those guys are great. Good, the guard.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah. They came and supported, and it was really very touching. I was honored for them to come out there. Anyway, 2,200 pull-ups. Everything started going to shit. My pee started to look like Irish whiskey, and it's not blood. A lot of people think that you start pissing blood. It's not blood. It's actually your body's breaking down muscle at such a fast rate that your kidneys can't process it. And for you science heads out there, your rhabdomyolysis.
It looks like Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola. that sweet Southern tea.
All right. So what's that like? I'm just curious, man. What's your body feeling like? Because the training, the training that we go through when there's beat downs and people can't, when guys are like, I say that, they're like, all right, what does that mean? And I'm like, just what you're saying, your body starts to break down. I mean, like you go so hard and so fast and you're going, it's an intensity that the body starts to shut down on the inside. What are you feeling like when you're at 2000? What's that like?
All right. You feel it waves. I mean, it's waves.
Okay.
So you start to go through waves of intense, very intense pain, followed by waves of kind of like your body's trying to, you get hit with the wave of pain and your body tries to then mask the pain.
Endorphin it.
Because it's accepted the fact that, okay, this is just what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we can't continue. Your body's all about efficiency. So in order to maintain this efficient movement pattern, it cannot maintain an efficient movement pattern through a great degree of pain. So it releases the chemicals to kind of mask that or numb it enough to you to get another few steps in or feet in or reps in. But then the pain comes back in a wave and it hits you. And then the wave comes back. Okay, well, we're going to let enable the body to do a few more to get to where he's going, because it just accepted that this is for survival. This is just what we need to do at this point in time. We cannot stop. So people ask if I slept during the record. Like, your body won't let you sleep. You don't sleep.
Yeah.
You don't. Your body has accepted the fate. It's locked in on the golden door. There are no. I mean, the doors to left and right actually become less than few. It's a great way of filtering the doors, actually, because the only doors that remain are the strong. The strongest distractions.
Yeah, man. And your body focuses on that. It's like, it doesn't care. It's like that, exactly. That's what, once you tell it that, and that's why those are different. That's absolutely right. That does happen.
Yeah, it's a very efficient way. It's an efficient way of trimming the fat.
Absolutely.
You know, things 100%. That you thought were important, things you thought that were just distraction.
Hell no,
those things go away
quick,
and you find out. Yeah, you find out real quick what your real demons are.
Yeah,
and So 2002, I did 1,000 more pull-ups. Everything started going bad. I was able to do 1,000 more pull-ups. I stopped at 3,202, ended up in the hospital for a few days with rhabdomyolysis and, torn forearms, bicep, and torn up hands. And I remember sitting there in the hospital bed, and I see the screen. The local news was covering it, and, USA Today had gotten word of it, too. And, the headline, they didn't care about the charity I was doing it for. They didn't care about how the media, they media likes drama. They like to focus a lot of times on the negative. And there's just, the headline was, sailor in hospital after pull-up attempt. you know, hospitalized, you know, sailor hospitalized after pull up a 10. That was the headline.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there, you know, I was like, well, this sucks. You know, again, I put all my eggs in that one basket. I was like, this feels really familiar right now. And I remember the conversations I had with my dad on the riverbanks. And I remember the things he would tell me. And I remember, you know, Hercules, you know, even, you know, he was driven to madness by one of the gods to the point where he murdered his whole family. Like he massacred his whole family. And he could have very easily accepted that as his lot in life and just been that guy, been that person and further dwindled into further madness. But he made a choice to still go out and take himself further and further away from that and to find his purpose. So I had a choice to make in that hospital bed. Like, what do I do now? You have two choices.
So it came to you. I was going to ask you that. It came to you while you were laying there from another one.
Yeah.
That sounds crazy.
Yeah.
But that's when it shows up.
That's what you do, too.
I do that, too. That's why I'm asking. Yeah. I was like, it shows up while you're actually laying there having your ass whipped from something else.
Yeah. 100%.
Okay, I was just making sure I wasn't crazy. I was like, Mikey, back me up on this, man. That's when that goes down, right?
Yeah, it's a very convenient conversation to have.
So convenient.
It's a very easy conversation. You get a bunch of people to agree with you.
Oh, right? Yeah. Dude, so
yeah.
He did that.
It makes sense. Right? It just makes sense. Yeah.
Everything.
Your brain is like, this is it. This is I know what'll put a cork in this right now.
That's awesome.
We're gonna have this conversation right now.
That's hilarious.
And and so, but when I was laying there, this kid had came in, and you know, this young kid, he was actually awaiting a surgery to have his. He was awaiting transfer from that hospital, regional hospital I was in, to a bigger hospital, to have surgery he needed like a kidney transplant. I can't remember quite what the surgery was, but it was like a life saving surgery.
Yeah.
But they brought this kid into the room. He's like, hey, you know what? I just want to shake your hand. And I was in there having, you know, playing the world's smallest violin, having a one man pity party. I didn't want to talk to nobody. I didn't even want to talk to this kid. And I was angry that they let someone in my room, but they rolled this kid into my room. He's like, I just want to shake your hand. I just want to tell you that, you know, that is amazing. I never thought anybody would do something that extreme for the cause I was doing it for. I was raising awareness for wounded vets and you know, like that. Why would you do that for something that's, I'm so inspired. The kid was so inspired. So there I was sitting there. I was like, man, here I am at my lowest point. And, you know, here I am. I feel like, you know, playing a one man pity party. And here I am at what I felt like was like a rock bottom moment for me. But yet someone was still watching. Like I still had power to inspire this kid. At my lowest point, I could still, the next words out of my mouth could inspire this kid, or it could break him down even further.
And that's crazy. When everyone's watching.
Yeah.
Everyone's watching.
That's
you never
when everyone
know.
Is watching. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I was like, wow. It didn't matter. He didn't care that I didn't break the record. He didn't care that
all
I didn't.
Right. Yeah,
know,
didn't care at all.
Mm-hmm. Didn't care at all. And here I was just so fixated on that, on a silly record, and fixated on, you know, tunnel vision, and making it all about me. And it really, you know, when you step out of the box and really look at the big picture, man, it's you never know who's watching and who you can still impact. You can still make a difference. Even at your lowest point, you can still make a difference. You can still lift somebody up.
Oh, yeah.
And that hit me. That was an epiphany. So after that, you know, 4 months later, you know, I recovered from that. And I was like, you know what, in a time like that, you have two choices to make. You could either accept things the way they are. You could either accept it, or you can make a change. You could change it, accept it or change it. That's really, at the end of the day, you got two choices. So I chose to change it. I chose to take all these excuses for why I couldn't beat the record and why I sucked, and turn them into reasons to come back and come back stronger and beat the record. So I put it out there that, you know, I would come back and reattempt the record a year later. And I would do it with a 30-pound pack on my back to show that you can not only come back after failure, but you can come back stronger after failure. And the weight of the pack also represented that burden we talked about earlier that we carry, and that it's a self-imposed burden, but it's a burden that not a lot of people have the luxury of taking off. You know, I had the luxury to stop doing pull-ups at any time. I had the luxury to get off that bar, get in my car, and go home. A lot of people carry that weight, that burden for their whole lives. And a lot of times that weight crushes them and they never recover from it. They lose the battle. So the fact that I had the luxury, I had a choice to make, was really enough for me to come back and try to beat that record again. And a year later, I did beat the record. At the time when I beat it, it had been beaten twice already since Goggins had it. And I had beat the record with 5,804 pull-ups while wearing a 30-pound pack. Before I came back and beat that record, I performed my third labor. So when I beat the record, it actually wasn't a labor. It was just me coming back to show myself and other people that I can, it was a personal thing for me. But before I came back and beat that record in December of that year, 2014, so the first attempt was July and December, I was training for my third labor. I was going to flip a 250-pound truck tire for the distance of a half marathon, 13 miles straight. And I wanted to do it again to bring raise some money for a charitable fund for wounded vets. A friend of mine had just committed suicide, lost the battle. He was in the Army, and I wanted to bring raise some money for his family, and also the charity that I was doing it for. And in the town of Oak Harbor, there's not a lot of flat land to flip the tire, so I ended up having to do it on a 500-foot stretch of pavement. Back and forth on a 500-foot stretch of pavement 140 times. It was 140 spans of a 500-foot, basically a parking lot. And I finished that labor in 10 hours. The night before I did that labor, I got a call from my sister. And this is what I'm talking about, those doors, man. Those doors come, those doors open up, those doors to the left and right open up at the most critical times. And one big door opened up for me the night before I did this third labor. I got a call from my sister, said, hey, you know what, dad's died, that my father had passed away. And so again, you always got a choice. And my father always said, you suffer more in imagination than in reality, Seneca. And I had a choice to make. I could either accept the situation. A lot of people would understand if I postponed the labor. A lot of people would get it. A lot of people would agree with me. Why would you continue on? Your father just passed away. But my dad, that's not the man that my dad raised me to be. He told me, he always told me to finish what I started. And if you're going to do it, go all the way. If you're going to do it, if you're going to choose to do it, you go all in. And so I woke up the next morning. I put it in a box, everything that I was supposed to be feeling, everything that I was supposed to be, going through at that time, what people expected me to be, I just put it in a box. And I remember standing there. It was cold, it was wet, it was raining. And once I started to flip that tire, the first few flips were heavy not just physically heavy. They were just heavy. But as I began to flip that tire over and over, and actually an old Vietnam vet, I was flipping a tire and he walks up to me. He's like, that thing rolls, right? And then he went on his way.
That's wisdom right there. Appreciate you. Yeah, he walked right up on you.
After that,
did you get that tattooed somewhere? Or a shirt or something? I mean, dropped a couple of good one-liners already that were just absolutely amazing. And by the way, if you don't turn all your labors into they call it the Hercules.
Yeah.
That's what I keep thinking about every time, because how people do the races and everything that down here now. I mean, as far as challenges, because you've already qualified it. You got it done, right?
Make
it the Hercules. It's like, if you want to touch, if you think you're a Hercules, you have to do this.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'll refer back to the disclaimer in the beginning.
Nobody
this
try
be
this.
At your own risk. I do not recommend anyone do any of these challenges.
Obviously, somebody told you to sign your physician. Before. That's why you had the disclaimer.
Third labor, that's 2014. Third labor knocked out, and then I came back in 2015, and I wanted to do a labor to bring awareness for Parkinson's disease. Again, each labor has the message, has the physical aspect has to do with the message. So people with Parkinson's, I remember my father just wanting to hold on to those things that he loved in life. And I just felt him losing that grip of it every single day. I saw what he never voiced it. He always had a positive attitude. He always, he never complained one time about it, but I could see it. I could see that he was, it hurt him. And I know that millions of other people with Parkinson's across the world, they might be feeling the same thing. So I wanted to make sure that they had a voice out there, and that, I was able to do something positive to bring awareness to that disease and raise money for those programs and resources. So I decided to climb a rope, the height of Mount Everest. So the plan was to climb a 20-foot rope for 27 hours straight to equal 29,029 feet. And I wanted to just broadcast that live and just do it and raise money. So I ended up raising 20 grand for the Michael J. Fox.
Love that man.
Michael J. Fox.
Freaking love that man, dude. Mm-hmm. How great is he? Another Michael. Write that down. Climbing a rope is probably one of the hardest damn things to do. First of all, how'd you pick that one?
So again, with the rope, I mean, why is climbing a rope hard? It's a full body movement on a, you know, you're on a pull-up bar. That's a fixed bar.
Absolutely. You're dealing with gravity and weight changing. I mean, just
exactly. The transfer of energy is more efficient on a bar because it's fixed. A rope is not fixed. So there's a lot of wasted energy going. Yeah. It's really a full body movement. It's very difficult to do it. It requires a lot of technical skill to climb a rope. To be efficient at climbing a rope, you have to have a good technique.
Is the rope how you busted your knees?
No. I busted. It was, I don't know if it was fate or what it was, but we were running on the beach and it was a divot. There was a small divot in the sand. It was the same divot that 15 guys in front of me just trolleyed, lollied down into. And when it came my turn to just run down into the divot, both knees went at the same time. It was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Oh.
So I can't explain how or why or what happened. All I know is I heard a loud pop and it was rest is history.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't know if you fell off the... Don't they have that big old rope in the...
Yeah, that's when I broke my leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rope. Yes, you know, the rope is very. Yeah, I mean, I got pretty busted up doing that one. Doing that one, 27 hours on the rope
for a second. Compared to the pull-ups on that fixed bar, I mean, at 22, how many? When did that get tough? When did that get tough?
You know, the rope was tough, but there was no point in the rope when climbing the rope that I was like, I thought that I was in trouble.
Oh, really?
It was tough. I mean, I had scraped. The hardest part of the rope was I had scraped all the skin down to the bone off of my shin. So I had guards. I had tape on my shin, and that didn't help. And the thing is, like at about a quarter, maybe halfway through that challenge, I had no. I was just bone. It was bone on rope. Yeah. Just bone on rope. Both shins.
Ugh.
So. There was no good wave that followed the pain wave after, during this one. It was just all pain for this one. But pain is a sensation. It's a feeling we can go on a whole tangent on what pain really is. It's not always, it doesn't always correlate to the actual extent of the physical injury itself. So it's a lot of it is mental. And so climbing the rope in large part was more of a mental challenge for me than it was a physical challenge. And I had been training. So at the time, I had failed the first record, did the tire flip, and I had beaten the record again. So I was in good climbing shape. I mean, pulling shape. So it was just transferring that to a rope. That was a challenge, having to transfer that, getting my core strong enough to be able to endure that. Because my core was just as wrecked as my forearms. And it's just a whole body movement. I can't explain how it just takes a lot. It just takes out of your whole body to climb the rope. So after that challenge, so that was my fourth labor. I went on and did my fifth labor, which was a truck pull. I pulled a truck. I pulled a Ford F-150 22 miles across Death Valley, 2.5-ton pickup truck in the middle of the summer. So to me, that truck pull was harder than the rope climb because the heat. So it's 110, 115 degrees.
So the elements, not necessarily.
The elements, yeah. It's almost like it's an extra, it's a third person in the room with the heat.
100%. Right? Hey, them suckers are game changers. When they show up, it changes everything.
Exactly, exactly. So I pulled the truck. I did that for my fifth labor.
Just out of curiosity, real fast, Mike, when you're going through your labors, you're writing your rewards down too. When you do, right through every labor, there's got to be a reward. What you pull out of this, each one of these have to trigger something new inside of you, whether you've realized that or not. It's like every time a lady has a baby, there's a new goes through that labor. There's a reward for that, and something you don't even know. And it also grows. Each one of these environments that you throw yourself into triggers something inside of you. And then life itself will show you what that is. I'm just curious as to, do you, talking about your labors, I keep thinking about the rewards that come after an ass whipping.
Like, do you recognize your rewards?
You pass that knowledge on too.
Absolutely. Well, you got to come back and, we're all the heroes of our own story, right? You go through the crucible, you come back and you share the lessons learned. And I'm sure you can relate to this, Marcus, but the reward for going through a crucible is the next crucible. The reward for the complete finishing a labor is the next labor. The reward for finishing your challenge is the next challenge. That's the reward.
Yeah, it's like a game. That's right. Next level up, an upgrade. Yeah, to the next level.
It's a gift. It's a gift.
Yeah.
You survived one of the hardest things that it tested you up to that point, and you're still standing. So your reward is whatever's next. It's the next level up.
Oh, that's a great way of saying that. And how you acknowledge, you don't acknowledge that, and you won't ever see it until somebody else does.
Mm-hmm.
People who come into your life and hear that you went through that phase and that level, they'll upgrade you. They'll be like, hey, man, it changes you in front of them.
100%.
When they hear you've done something like that. In absolute time.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it on their face.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And as a matter of fact, you can almost tell when someone thinks something a certain way, you don't have to scold them. You don't have to talk down to them. You don't ever have to say anything to them again. The minute they see that, and it's actually the best thing you can witness when someone does that. And it's true. That's truly what that is. That's a great way of saying that.
Exactly. So, so that brought me to my, fifth labor, and now I'm on my sixth labor, and, I'm out of the military now, so I did my 11. So I pulled the truck.
I pulled the truck on
terminal terminal leave. You know, this is my last thing. Moved down to Portland, Oregon, to be a trainer, to be a coach.
Yeah.
You know, I'm also a performance coach, so I coach athletes. Been doing it for about as long as I've been in the military. To that point, it was kind of like started out as my side gig. Higher and higher caliber athletes started coming, reaching out to me to train. And it just kind of evolved from there. So at the time I got out of the military, I had already been working with, teams in the government, teams, other military teams, high level athletes. And I was sharpening my tool set in that arena in preparation for the transition out of the military to go do that full time. And that's what I did. So I moved down to Oregon to pursue that full time, started planning my sixth labor. Sixth labor was, I decided to run 20 miles every day for 100 consecutive days. I wanted to, a lot of people at the time, the internet's undefeated, and I'm victim to it too, but you start seeing the comments, you can only ignore so much. And I was like, people were saying, well, what, do something, you're very strong. The people were saying, like, you're strong. But I don't. They say I don't have endurance, and that really got to me.
Oh, really?
I was like, so I don't have endurance. Okay, well, what could I do? So I ran 20 miles for 100 days straight, and I did it to fund. I organized, planned, and funded a 3-day veterans retreat for people suffering from traumatic brain injury, PTSD, and depression. It was out in Sisters, Oregon. There's a lot of we had a lot of different modalities out there, but I worked with I brought a really strong team together, and all the money I raised from that labor went to actually funding that retreat for about six. It was a small group, about six vets who were suffering from those things, and it was one of the most meaningful projects I've done in my life, and worth every ounce of pain that went into the labor and process of just getting that off the ground, and so. That one, that labor was, that was the longest labor I've done. 100 days straight. And I was also going to school full time and working full time. So a lot of my runs were at 4, 3, 4 in the morning or, late at night, 9, 10, 11 at night when I could just get them in. And, again, that golden door and the exits are out there. It just trims the fat, man. It trims the fat.
Well, there's that feeling that you get when you accomplish something inside your frame. It's almost like you get a superpower. Like, I can't believe this thing got through that. Like, we made it. Even beat to death. You're laying there in the most pain, just suffering. We talked about that, even when we're in the hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a point to when this thing kicks in your head, and you're like, hey, good job. Like, we got through that. We're still alive and talking about it. That was the point. And yeah, that everyone
was,
will
that,
say
that was the point.
That was the point. It was just to survive that thing. Not anything else. I mean, you know, and some of those, and then there's, that's funny. I'm guilty of that too. People are like, well, you do this, you didn't have that. And I'm like, well, all right, fine. Let's go get that done then. But you know,
no, I hear you, man.
I mean,
no,
hey, bro, that happens to me too, man. I don't think you can turn that off. I mean, you could probably train it and set it down and put a leash on it, but I don't know if you could absolutely turn that off. That little voice is funny.
Yeah.
Y'all are a special breed. Cause
I mean, I don't know what that is, but I
got
the same problem.
You could tell me shit all day long and I'd be like, so? Yeah.
Some of us aren't wired like that, man.
I am not wired like that.
Yeah. So, man. So that's pretty much it. So seventh labor, I pulled another truck, except this time I did in the Arctic Circle. It was during the pandemic. Went up to the Arctic Circle 2020.
You didn't miss much down here.
Yeah. I was working in when everything kicked off with that. I was out in remote Alaska. I was out in Western Alaska. Bethel, Alaska, I don't know if you're familiar, is Bethel, Alaska. And it's you can only get in and out by plane.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those places where it's just very, just really cold and just remote and wasn't a whole lot out there. But I went out to the Arctic Circle, did the truck pull out there, pulled it 10 miles with 50 pounds, wearing 50 pounds of chains. And for the eighth labor after that, which is my last labor that I completed, I broke the world record for the longest full body immersion in ice. So I sat in a box of ice up to my shoulders for 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Dang.
To
suppress that record.
What was that like coming out of that?
Coming
out of it.
Yeah, man. It was cold.
And how? How did it slow you all the way down?
Slow me down is like my heart
rate. Like your
rate.
Blood flow. Yeah, the blood. I'm curious as to how far you slowed down, and then when you came out of that, actively rewarming back up, what that felt like.
Yeah. So the medical. The med guy I had watching me, you know, the safety observer I had watching me, I had a chart of like what the physical response would be as my temperature dropped.
Oh, was he talking to you during that? And I was like, all right, do you feel this? This is what's going to happen. That's it, right?
Well, you know, when it got to a point where it's like, I'm probably dead at this point, but just put some sunglasses on me.
Yeah, check.
And like Weekend at Bernie's and just keep the clock
going. All right, keep it going.
Yeah. So it was. That was a mental one. So I did that one because, you know, I had done all these physical ones and I honestly, like, I needed to rest my body. I had done seven labors in about a 3 year window and I needed to, you know, my body was telling me that in my adrenals, right. I needed to rest. So I still wanted to keep the ball moving forward though, and do something. So I was like, you know what, all I got to do is sit in a box and endure the cold for a little bit. I can do this. The toll on my body. I mean, I'm going to get blisters. I might get some cold injuries, but I can do this one. And a lot of it was again, just breath work, learning a new skill. Like I didn't know much about the breathing other than the 4x4 breathing.
4x4. Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
That's huge.
So it was like,
I wish they would have sat us down and made us do that.
Yeah.
That was a serious game changer for me was the breath.
It works.
Yeah. It works, man.
And it not only works, it works right away.
Oh, right away.
You don't have
to. I mean, like right away. Yeah. You want here's the supply, demand, and reaction right there. I mean, I completely agree with that. And matter of fact, it's kind of one of the only times I ever got irritated. And I was like, why didn't y'all show me this?
Because Marcus just started breathing
about
a year and a half ago is when he really got into breath work.
Get started on that.
He started by using an app, and the app would tell him as he would progress, like, oh, you're at the level as a whatever. And I'll never forget one day I'm sitting next to him and he shows me his phone. It says, you have the breath hold of a Navy SEAL. I was like, you made it.
Finally, you made it. Now it's official.
That's official. There you go.
And I don't know what it is when we're kids, because there are the section of the people that we hang out with that do that. They meditate. Mm. They do. They're into all that. And then there's the athletes. Yeah. But if the athletes would breathe like that after they get done working out, and vice versa, if they could just those in between the mind, body, spirit, you plug all three of those in there, man. I try to tell them, I was like, hey, if you train your body, the reason they say that thing's made of clay is because you can mold it. Mm-hmm. The skin's the sock it comes in, right? Mm. So if you know working that body out does that to it, what do you think working that mind out will do? It'll change it completely. And your spirit separately. Mm. Like take a third of your day and put all three of those in there. Work your body out one for a second, your mind, and your spirit. You ever run into anybody that trains all three of those? They are very dangerous. You can't fluster them. You can't get them worked out. I mean, their bodies, it's serious when you see one of them. There's not a lot of them walking around.
You.
No, there's not.
I'm still working on it. It's usually by the time you get to the spirit part, your body's beat to death. You can't, you know what I'm talking about?
That's a paradox.
That's a paradox.
Yeah.
That's a paradox. If no one's there to teach you at a young age to do all three of those, you will completely destroy one of them trying just to have a good time with it.
Yeah.
It's like an addiction for each. Yeah.
So after the ice, were you like, okay, I need a year off? Or were you ready to go into your next labor?
Right. So, yeah. So after the ice, every time I finish the labor, I'm always looking to the next one. Because, again, the reward, for me, the reward is that. Like, I get excited for the next. I don't spend too much time thinking about, I don't care too much about the records. Records will be broken for the rest of history, time. I look at the impact that it has. I really follow that and see how can I leverage this accomplishment in a way that impacts other people. I look for ways to leverage, whether I can speak about it, whether I can, tell this story to someone who needs to hear it, even if it's just one person that needs to hear it. I think that's enough for me. So I'm always looking for the next labor. The first eight that I did were me battling kind of like my personal demons, things that were deeply rooted in my life. And the last four that I'm on now will be things that kind of impact the bigger tribe, kind of impact everybody on a more global scale. So, I mean, for my next labor, I might as well. I guess I'll announce it here since and this will be the first time I'm announcing this labor. So I might as well do it now if we're gonna talk about it, because I'm sure that the one of the questions is gonna be what's next.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what's next is I plan to swim across the seven seas of the ancient world while pulling a 10-ton ship with a harness.
What?
All right, pencil me in on one of those. I want to be there for that.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Has anybody done that?
No one's done that. That I know of.
So name the seven seas.
So you got the Adriatic Sea, you got the Black Sea, you got the Red Sea, you got the Caspian Sea, you got the Aegean Sea, you got the Mediterranean Sea, you got the Persian. The Persian Gulf was a sea in the ancient world, and you got the North Sea.
Okay. Oh my gosh! When do you want to do that?
The fact that he knew all of those, because I was like Dead Sea, Baltic. Super impressive. none of those were on his list. I was like, all right.
I was just gonna say I just studied the seas with our son Axe for his Bible class. He had to actually do a map, and so I was curious if you.
Sure. Well, you know
the
definition
one,
of yeah, the definition one. Of seas have changed throughout history, but according to the ancient Greeks, which is what I'm going off of,
right?
How they had it in their literature, those were the seven. But I mean, it was different for the Romans. It was different for a lot of different people.
All right, next. All right, after this one, we're trekking Alexander's path through the whole Persian Empire,
or do the Silk
all
Road
the way to Alexandria in Afghanistan.
Do the Silk Road?
Yeah, the Silk Road run. Right. You said something. That the greatest record holder of all is time. It holds all the records. I'd never heard it said like that. Can I steal that one from you?
Marcus is gonna be like, absolutely. I'm gonna
take
that
was a good
these,
one, man.
These,
it's like the best
these.
Record holder of all time is time. I mean, eventually it'll break all the records.
Right. So when do you plan on doing this?
Next year. Next summer.
Like 2023?
2023. And it's a...
First of all, you've been swimming, obviously, because there's a big difference out in the ocean.
A seas.
Ocean. Same thing. Sea swimming is different than indoor swimming, for sure, 100%. But to pull a 10-ton ship, you think about those big tugboats that tug those, the horsepower on those ships aren't really that high. It's just consistency, it's perseverance, it's just maintaining a steady low gear.
That's right.
And pulling over, but time, if you just stay consistent and keep that momentum and force going, you'd be surprised how much you can pull.
And well, that applies in a lot of things.
What if you start pulling that sucker and it gets momentum and then what? It starts pulling you?
Oh,
because I can't wait to see you try this.
Hold on. Have you attempted,
are we getting off topic here? Because I just got some stuff running in my head.
Have you attempted to pull something that heavy while swimming?
I can barely swim.
Oh my god!
I'm really barely here for this.
We are going. We want to be there for that.
I hadn't been up in that area, anyways, man.
Yeah, you have to.
I hope you would. I hope you will join me. That would be a great honor.
We will be there for that. We like to travel anyway. We love to explore, so.
So I know you trained Colin O'Brady. So is Colin O'Brady going to train you for this?
Well, I'll definitely be picking his brain for a lot of the you know, the technique with the swimming. But you know, Colin, we talk about Colin O'Brady. I believe he was a guest on the show not too long ago. I trained him to cross. His first guy to cross Antarctica solo, unsupported and unaided. Incredible athlete, and I threw this by him, and you know, he's 100%.
What did he say?
Same reaction you guys.
That's what I thought.
You guys had the same exact reaction.
You can't ask guys like us because it'd be like, oh yeah, come on, man. You know what I mean? It sounds great.
I'm like, what?
Colin's like, you could do better.
You can do better. Yeah, you go bigger. That's all you can do. He's probably the one that's always talking smack, right? When you're laying there, he's like, oh, what about this?
You know, Colin's very. He thinks he's slick. He doesn't really talk smack. But he has a look. He has a smile.
All right.
That you see, that it's a smile that kind of talks at you. I remember we were doing this event that he does. It's called 29029. He's basically, you climb up and down a mountain until, you know, it loops up and down a mountain until you reach the height of Everest. It's 29029. And I was doing it with him one of these years. I was hurting. And I remember he was walking by me and he didn't have to say anything. He just gave me that fucking look. Yeah. With a little smirk.
A little fang hangs out the side like, you know. Yeah. Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, this
great.
Is crazy.
I love him, though.
How did you come up with that plan?
That's a good one.
Well, you know, this labor is twofold. It's twofold. You know, the seas are the bloodline of the world, right? And a lot of the things that we're doing in the oceans and in the seas, you know, is I've always been, you know, fascinated with the water, you know, even just being on the boat, being in the water, growing up in the lakes and just the lands with my father growing up. And I wanted to kind of send a message out there like, yeah, you know what, we need to do something. We're killing the fish, killing the animals. We gotta do something about this. But the second part of this labor, this really is a love letter to my son. I just had a son.
Oh, congratulations. Thank
you. He turns 11. He turned 11 months this month on the 27th.
Aww.
It'll be a year next month. And I wanted to leave something.
Wait, not the, just November 27th.
That's our anniversary.
November
27th. Oh yeah, congratulations.
Yeah.
There it is.
Scorpio.
Now you have to.
Watch
now
out.
You have so to.
Wow. Yeah. Come on. What's his name?
His name's Michael.
There's another Michael. Right there. All right. What's his middle name? What'd you
Raymond.
Strap on this? What is it?
Raymond.
Michael Raymond.
Michael Raymond.
Is that your dad's name?
Yeah, it's dad's name.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. Good stuff,
figured.
Man.
Yeah. That's awesome.
What are you talking about?
I wanted to do this one for him and really dedicate this labor for my boy. And you know, these things, that's really what it's about. I mean, our time on this planet is very limited, and the things that we do, in this very short amount of time on this earth echoes in eternity, and eternity is eternity from the lens of your loved ones and the people that you leave your inspiration, footprints of inspiration to. It's not a time. Eternity is not a time. It's a lens. It's a frame through which your loved ones view you and talk about you and see you. That's eternity. That's immortality. It is not a time frame. So with doing these challenges and these labors, I hope to leave those same footsteps of inspiration that my father left for me in his short time on this earth. I want to do the same thing for my son in the short time with him on this earth. And the only thing, the only goal, the only objective is for him to leave this world a better place than he found it. Like I hope I am doing, and I hope that everyone who hears my message does. And that's really what it's about for me.
That's so awesome.
Your
dad is just, he sounds like such a great guy. Do you have a picture of him that you would be willing to share with us that we could put on the YouTube?
I have one. You know, it's funny. I have like one picture with my dad that I ever took.
Oh.
And it's a very grainy picture. It's only one picture. It's at my high school graduation. Because again, like just him with the going through that, we just didn't take a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
He actually didn't like taking too many pictures in his later years. But I do have one picture, and it's a picture that's very dear to me. It's just me and him at my high school graduation.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, if you're willing to share it, we'll put it, splice it into the YouTube that we do for your show. Absolutely. I'm saying this without asking.
Yeah, no, we're always good. Always good.
Yeah, I think that would be really special.
If I can't do it, I'll let you know when you're ready.
Okay. Is your mom still around?
She is. She's retired from the military. After she retired, she did another. She went into the reserves. Retired out of the reserves, and during that same time, she was working at one of the VA hospitals as a head nurse there. Retired from that, so now she's just living retired life in New Mexico.
That's good for awesome.
Her. Saint.
We came from a really good family, it sounds like.
Hey, what's your kid doing? Oh, no, he's probably out there pulling some one-ton boat through the seas. Or, he's running over in a mountain volcano or something. Yeah. I don't know.
He's strong. He's a strong one. I know he's strong because he likes to rip the hairs out of my beard when I'm holding him. I got to hold him from a distance because he gets a hold of my beard.
I can't wait to see what he comes up with.
I know.
Michael Raymond.
Aww.
Well, yeah.
Awesome.
So, all right,
brother, how can our listeners track you and follow you and keep in touch with you?
Yeah.
Sure, man. I'm on most social media. Mike McCastle is the handle, and I got website mikemccastle.com. Yeah, if you I have an open door, so please reach out.
Do you have a book?
I do not have a book.
You don't have a book. So you just have your socials and people can follow you on your 12 Labors of Love website. Is that what it is?
12 Labors Project. It's mikemccastle.com. It's on the website.
Okay. Yeah,
12 Labors Project is the actual
name of
it. I can't wait to finish it, man. That's the Hercules.
I'm serious. We will go. We really do like to travel.
I hope so. I hope you'll be on the boat. I hope you'll be on the boat.
Oh, you don't want me on there. I'll talk more shit to you, man. I'll be throwing stuff. I'll chum the water around you just in case, just to have something show up. You know how we do it.
I'm gonna close this door, Marcus.
Hey, man, God bless you, bro. Thanks for doing it.
Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I'll take care. Thank you.
You too, brother.
Yep. Oh. God bless. Bye.